for a friend. My name's Louise and I have got Adam with me. Hi, Adam.
Hello, Louise and Steph. How are you doing?
I'm good, thanks. Steph, how are you?
Yeah, good. I've been an absolute potato since we broke up for the holidays. So I saw a TikTok that said, if you are a teacher, how is it that you are not bed rotting for the first 2 weeks of the school holidays? Now, we're not all like you and can jet off to fabulous trips. No. Nor would I want to. I have literally been horizontal for much of the last fortnight. So I'm going to turn it around, hopefully, with the final 4 weeks.
Yeah, but to be fair, Steph, it's your first year and it is chronically hard.
I don't do well without structure. This is why today's discussion is quite interesting about why I enjoyed my childhood in certain ways.
We're going to put some structure back into you with bureaucratic ministry school stuff.
Yes, that's what I need. That's what I need. I need a midweek meeting for me to know what day it is.
Actually, because I obviously have just come back off a holiday, I completely forgot which day it was. It was really nice when you think, oh, is it? Wait, it's Saturday today. That's weird. Yeah, it was lush. And you've just come back off holiday as well, haven't you, Adam?
I've just come back. Yeah, it's actually one of the longest holidays I've ever been on. It was 2.5 weeks. I don't normally go away for that length of time. But yeah, it was absolutely brilliant. Holiday in England. The sun was shining. It was nice and warm. And yeah, I've come back kind of refreshed and raring to go.
Oh, amazing. Lovely.
Did you have a good time, Louise?
Oh, I had an amazing time. So one of the really funny things that happened was, I can't remember where I was because I've visited so many different towns. I travelled through the Baltic states. I went from Estonia down to Latvia, down to Lithuania, back up to Latvia, back up to Estonia.
Wow.
And I was hunting down Russian Orthodox churches because they're fabulous architecture. They've got those lovely onion domes and there were loads of them. The place is littered with them. But I think I was in Riga and I got approached by an old lady offering me a Bible. And I just swear, like I feel she was like a Jehovah's Witness. And I just thought, you are having a bubble, aren't you?
You can't get away from it.
I know. Having said that, I didn't see any kingdom halls, although I know there must be. There's probably one in each capital city for each country. Like, the countries are so underpopulated. So Estonia's only got 1.3 million people and Latvia's only got 1.8 million people, but 30% of them are Russian. And Lithuania's only, you know, got somewhere in between those two numbers. Like, they've got less people than a big city. So
because I've been to Riga a few times, about 5 times, I think, because I used to have family there. And I was just amazed at how clean it was. It's so beautifully clean.
So beautifully clean. And actually, Riga was the one that I thought was the mankiest, ugliest.
Right. Wow, that's so interesting. Yeah.
Vilnius was like unbelievably amazing. Tallinn was really beautiful, yet also clean and also neat and paradisaical. All of the three countries.
I was just gonna say, I think it's just such an underrated part of Europe, but carry on.
Yeah, no, definitely. So at one church, there was an old buyer gardener there. He came and he started talking to me. And he said, he was Russian, right? But he said, I moved to Estonia. Like, when it was part of Russia, it was easy. You could just move country. Because then I served in the Estonian Navy for like 40 years.
Wow.
And
then,
I know. And he had these dungarees on that had the old CCCP logo on. Oh, God, I would love to buy them off him. But he said, my daughter's worked in London. He'd been in London. He'd been in the Navy. He'd been all over the world. He'd been to London. He'd been to everywhere. He said, my daughter used to live in London, work in London. But he goes, we've bought her a flat back in Tallinn. He goes, because the quality of life here is so much better.
It really is.
No,
in Lithuania, amazing. Louise, did you come across any witnesses there?
Well, no, only this woman who tried to flog me a Bible.
Right, okay. It was just interesting because Lithuania came up. Do you remember the podcast episode we did on the facts and figures from the service report?
Oh, yeah.
Lithuania is one of the fastest declining population of witnesses in the world.
Are they under ban because of Russia? Are they under some sort of Russian?
No,
they're still reporting.
Right. Yeah, no, they're completely free of Russia. They're all done with Russia. There's a lot of Russians that live there, but and obviously like the architecture and that is kind of Russian influenced, but it is solidly European, absolutely solidly, like you say, underrated European country. So that's really, and I'd say that's probably down to education, because it just seems like they're very well educated people.
They are, and I think culturally they're quite skeptical. They're very cold people. I found that when we were in Riga, that they're generally very unfriendly towards the public, but so efficient and so clean. I just wonder if they just eye everything with skepticism, and if something, that's maybe why the Jehovah's Witness dogma doesn't really appeal. I don't know.
Yeah. I think that's true. And I think when I was doing the research on this, we've totally got off topic here, haven't we? But it's interesting.
Very good.
I think from memory, when I was doing the research, there was some of that, and there was also the factor of it's got quite a low age expectancy, a life expectancy. So I wonder if that's a factor. It's somewhere in the low 70s.
Oh, wow.
I think that's maybe a factor in a lot of the older witnesses. They don't live much past 70. Mm. And so a lot of the old crowd are dying off now.
And they've had such a difficult life in the last 70 years. So the occupation by Nazi occupation, I'm guessing, was it? Or is it mainly Soviet occupation right through...
From
the beginning of the century, maybe both. And I found the same in Hungary as well. When I was in Budapest, you can see that this is a country that has just been ravaged by being occupied in the last 100 years. As I said, first by Nazis, then by Stalin. And it takes its toll on a country for generations. You can definitely see that.
One of the towns that I visited, there was some like historical thing about Jews, and there used to be like loads of Jews there, loads and loads of Jews. And then I read this thing that said that I don't know if it was Russians that dressed up as Nazis or Nazis that dressed up as Russians and went in and killed them all, the entire population of Jews in this town, but dressed as the other bad guy. One set of bad guys dressed as another set of bad guys, tending to be not bad guys.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like I should have more detail on that, but I don't. So, no, not many witnesses. And although I'd gone on a church tour, really and truly, one of the countries didn't have many churches at all. And the ones that I found weren't, you know, thriving hubs of the community. They were more like beautiful pieces of architecture with a few people.
But I think that's to be expected, isn't it? Because you had Russian Orthodoxy, and then you've got a huge amount after communism when religion was pretty much outlawed. So people weren't living that kind of traditional Christian life for many years under occupation. So I imagine it's very difficult to kind of get that back.
Yeah. And you're right. I read somewhere else that it said that Latvians weren't very friendly. And I bloody loved that, because it meant that you could walk around. You're like, you know, go for a walk in England and you've got to say hello every person. Hello. Oh, nice weather, isn't it? Hello. And I like just look away and then I think I'm being really rude. Oh, my God, it was so easy. And like, I didn't have to look at anyone. I didn't have to say hello to anyone. It was brilliant. Loved it. I couldn't move.
That's terrible. But you've been in the South for too long. You've been out of the North. For too long. You've got that stubborn coldness now. You need to come home.
Well, speaking of coming home, so we're going to move on to our first topic. Yesterday I went to Birmingham to the Ozzy Osbourne Goodbye Ozzy.
I did not know you were an Ozzy fan, Louise.
Well, I mean, I'm not an Ozzy fan, but it's a moment in history, isn't it?
I guess.
It was a moment. It's just like when Lady Di died, or it was like when Elvis died. I remember when Elvis died. I was playing out with my friend Julia McQuinn. I think I was about 8. And they had a TV and we didn't. And I heard it on the TV. And I went, I've got to go home now, Julia. And I ran home and cried. Sobbed my heart out. Yeah, I just thought, oh, I'll go up because, you know, I'm on school holiday and I've got no better to do. And I thought it might be a laugh. The point being, I know Ozzy Osbourne is not the subject of our podcast, Asking for a Friend. The point being, as well as there being thousands and thousands of Black Sabbath fans there. There were loads of Jehovah's Witnesses out all over Birmingham with the carts. And I just thought, a discussion about how different field service is now.
Definitely. He's just like them to capitalise on any kind of tragedy, though, isn't it? It's just, I remember seeing photographs of Jehovah's Witnesses outside Auschwitz. They will preach, they will have the magazines for tourists who come to Auschwitz. It's just so tasteless.
I was surprised to hear you say that there was lots of witnesses visible, because since COVID, I just get the feeling that the ministry or the preaching work, whatever they call it these days, it's died a death. It really seems to have lost its impetus. And I've been to a number of cities in the UK, and there just doesn't seem to be that presence anymore. So it really surprises me that.
I'm going to Leeds tomorrow. I'll keep an eye out.
Yeah, keep an eye out.
Yeah.
Because I was surprised. I was honestly surprised, because I haven't seen carts, as you say, since before COVID. I was under the impression that everybody had been instructed to go back to door knocking. So I just thought maybe the carts had died a bit since COVID. So I was really surprised to see that many out. And I don't know if it was because it was a big city. And so I have seen, last time I went to Birmingham, I met a friend and we saw one cart and he was going, "Oh my God, no, don't go up to Louise. Don't go up to Louise. No, stop it. Don't go up to Louise." But we only saw one cart. This time I must have seen five or six. And I don't know if it was whether they were cynically out because they knew loads of Black Sabbath fans would need saving that day, or whether that's just a normal thing. So the really funny thing was, one of the pamphlets or magazines or whatever it is that they put in their carts, because I didn't get close enough, said something about, will prejudice ever end? Well, it was the least prejudiced crowd I've ever seen, including London. There were like Muslim ladies in the full Muslim thing with Aussie t-shirts on. I kid you not. There were Black people, Muslim people, Chinese people. There was every nationality with the Aussie. People that like old people, really frumpy people.
Who needs a convention? Who needs an international convention?
Yeah, it was. It was like an international convention. There were people in the traditional dresses with their Aussie tattoos. And
It was
very interesting.
So did you speak to the witnesses?
So no, I didn't. Partly because I always lose my voice. I don't know what it is I want to say. When I'm not around witnesses, there's a million things I want to say. As soon as they're there, I just go, "Oh, well, that's stupid, isn't it?" And I lose all sense of reason. So I didn't go up to them. And then B, I didn't feel the urge anymore like I did last time when I was with my friend, which was a couple of years ago. I kind of felt angry about the child abuse issue. I felt nothing this time, which was quite liberating.
Yeah.
I mean, if you saw somebody at a cart, would you approach them and would you have a particular line that you might use?
I think much the same as you. It would depend what mood I'm in. If I felt the urge, then I would go over. I don't think I'd ever want to go over sort of angrily.
No.
I did approach someone at a car a while back. It was in, where was I now? I was in Edinburgh. And I got chatting to this, I think he was an elder on the car. And I just asked him a couple of things about the doctrine. And he couldn't really answer me. And I said to him that I found it inconsistent. I said, I didn't identify as an ex-witness, but I said I like some of the principles that the religion puts out there, but I found that hard to match up with the way that the organization dealt with child abuse. And he couldn't really come back with much, so he kept trying to change the subject. Mm-hmm. And I kept trying to change the subject back and saying, look, if the organization is not protecting the children in the organization, shouldn't that be their top priority? Should they not be working with the authorities and trying their best? And I ended up getting his email address, because I said to him, look, I've got quite a lot of questions. Would you mind if I email and you can, you know, send me some of your literature or whatever, that kind of thing?
Yeah.
So I emailed him just a list of questions, maybe 5 or 6 questions. And he got back to me and basically said, you need to go on the website and find the answers. And I replied to his email saying, well, the questions that I've got, I've scoured your website and the answers are not on there. And he never got back to me. So I think you may have just thought, look, I'm wasting my time with this guy. But yeah, it was very much go to the website. Mm-hmm. I'm not getting into a conversation with you.
Mm-hmm. I've heard that that's the advice they're given, to direct mm-hmm. people to the website. There's no more reasoning from the scriptures. And if the householder says this, you say that. It's kind of just go to the website.
Yeah,
they are taught the exact opposite of what we were taught growing up.
Yeah.
Which was how to engage, keep the householder there, keep them talking. Now they just want to just stand by a cart.
Yeah.
Until it's time. I was watching a video the other day and somebody was doing it was about a convention video, a recent convention, and it showed the brother on the platform giving a talk and he says, let's turn to this scripture, and he gets his phone out and he's looking for the scripture with his iPhone, and I just find that bonkers.
I find that bizarre as well.
Even if everybody's on a tablet or whatever, to stand there and look at the Bible on your phone. I mean, I'm not religious. I don't hold the Bible under any particular esteem, but I was almost I felt a bit like they were disrespecting the Bible.
But we love books, Steph.
This is true.
Be more the adherence to a lovely paper, sensory, rustly experience.
But it just felt so cheap. It just felt really lazy.
Yeah. The last time I was at a Kingdom Hall, I saw everybody had tablets and their watchtower, the Bible, everything was on there. And I did think, if I was a 15-year-old, I'd sit at the back with my tablet and I'd be on Google with a tab open for the Bible if anybody looked over. That's what I'd do.
Yeah, I'd be shopping. I'd be on Amazon.
What would you be on, Adam?
I'd be checking the football news. Definitely.
It's just human nature, isn't it? We all would.
Do you know, there was when I was in, let me think now, it was probably late 90s, early 2000s. So where we grew up, Steph, I don't know whether you knew, but the JW football scene was quite big. All the young brothers played football. And there was an elder once, and he was telling me, he said, I got to a point where football after the meetings on a Sunday was getting a bit too, it was taking over my life, he said, because I was conducting the watchtower one Sunday from the platform. And while the brother was reading the first paragraph, I was looking out into the audience and thinking, right, I've got a back four, 2 midfielders, and a striker. I need a goalkeeper. And he was working out his team.
Who is this, TW?
No, this was a brother from another congregation let me think now, North East Manchester. Yeah.
Okay.
But it's always been the case, hasn't it, that people have been distracted. Think you look out, you're giving a talk from the platform, just blank expressions on people's faces.
Yeah. I was talking to my girlfriend the other day about how, do you ever remember that time when you would get the giggles in the Kingdom Hall and you weren't allowed to laugh? But like me and my brother would laugh at each other quite a lot. Carl and me were very similar in age and we would just find things funny. And then there'd be this relief where somebody on the platform would say something mildly amusing and we'd just be cracking up laughing. As if we had the permission to laugh for a while and be like, wasn't that funny? We were like, no, it was. It was hilarious.
It's because we weren't allowed to do anything. We had to live our lives in suspension. Yeah. We weren't allowed to play school football or do school plays or do anything like that. We weren't allowed to have hobbies or interests because everything had to be the witnesses. And so I've read that it's really psychologically damaging to live like that, and that most people can only manage to live in that vacuum for like a maximum of about 5 years before they start getting really significant mental health issues. And so all those things, the giggling and the football and the other stuff, was a way of trying to add something into that vacuum. Otherwise, yeah, we would have gone really mad.
I felt with the iPads and the technology being introduced to Kingdom Halls and meetings, if the organization had just waited a few years, they could have introduced some kind of, I don't know what they'd call it, an official JW tablet, mm-hmm, where, you know, for a small fee, you could purchase one from the organization, but it would be locked down. It would only be able to have the meeting material and the Bible and the songbook on it. You couldn't surf the internet or anything else.
Yeah, that's a good question, actually. So do Kingdom Halls have Wi-Fi now? Is that how it works?
Yeah.
Wow, okay. So they could do a closed network, couldn't they, where you could only get on? That's a really good point.
But it's too late now. I mean, they opened the floodgates too early, didn't they? And everyone just started bringing their iPads and, you know, nothing's locked down.
So the only other thing that I was going to mention that I noted with these carts in Birmingham was I saw a brother with a beard, which was just unusual for me. I know it's kind of normal. And the sisters all wore trousers, all of them. And obviously nobody was going up to them. Nobody was going up to them. None of the carts. They just stood there. And I just thought, oh God, that is so hard, isn't it? To stand there and see, I don't know, 100,000 people walk past you. And not a single one be interested.
And they'd count that as a success. The persecution complex is so strong. They'd probably be like, you know, we did our bit today because we were there. Just deluding themselves that they'd made some kind of difference. It would have made absolutely no difference if they were there or not.
No, it wouldn't have, no. So on that point of Sister Steph, you were going to talk to us about some stuff about the sister's role?
Yeah, so we were just talking, weren't we, with ourselves about, you know, the changes. And I know that because we all attended Adam's dad's memorial in October, that we got to see a little bit of what the organisation looks like compared to how we remember it. So I think we'll all remember it pretty much the same way, which is that sisters, women in the congregation, have absolutely minimal role, if anything. Mm. Their job is to get everybody ready for the meeting, essentially. And then when they walk through the doors, then their job is to sit and listen. They don't partake in anything actively. When we were growing up, the only thing the sisters ever did, which was related to the actual program, would be to maybe give a talk. And because when I qualified as a teacher, I still want this. I want a sign making that says, I do not allow the women to teach. I want it in my classroom. I've not managed to find the perfect thing yet. And I know a lot of people won't get it, but it would be hilarious for me.
Yeah.
And because they're not allowed to teach, and because Jehovah's Witnesses take that so literally, the only thing the sisters were ever allowed to do was to do a kind of demonstration talk between the two of them on the platform, as if we were kind of watching with a hidden camera this conversation. It was usually two women. One of them was a sister. Well, the other one was obviously a sister, but pretending not to be. And it was usually, you know, how are you doing at work today? Oh, really? I just don't like sitting where everyone's smoking. Oh, about smoking. Did you know there's a scripture? Blah, blah, blah. And then you go into that. Okay, great. Or it might be an older sister giving a younger sister some encouragement. Or it was always something really basic, 5-minute talk. And we had one thing that was it on the platform. In 3 meetings a week, we had one 5-minute segment. So if you're thinking 2 hours for a Sunday, 2 hours for a Thursday, 1 hour for a Tuesday or Monday book study. So 5 hours of meetings a week, the sisters got 5 minutes of.
And what I didn't realize, I thought it was just because of the nature of the demonstration that it was two people talking, that you always sat facing each other and not facing the audience. But there was one meeting I was at where an older sister of an ethnic persuasion who didn't quite understand the rules, although she was doing a little two-person demonstration, she turned to face the audience, and it was explained that was not allowed because facing the audience was teaching and women aren't allowed to teach, and that's why you had to be sideways onto the audience facing each other so you weren't teaching them. Isn't that bizarre? I just thought it was just a feature of the little demonstration thing, but it was actually a part of
and we never questioned it though, did we just knew that was the way it was. I remember.
I was just going to say, Steph, the most disturbing thing to me is that I never questioned it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Looking back, it's appalling, the disparity. Yeah. But, you know, you never question it when you're inside.
No. And I remember having a talk with a sister once and just being, she just taught, I was a householder, and she just taught the whole way. And it's like, my being here is utterly pointless. It was. I think I just said hello at the beginning, and she just went with the whole item, and I was like, well, why did I have to go to your house after school and prepare this? Because I had there was just no point to it. And then of course they can do the menial tasks of the Kingdom Hall, so the sisters would be just as involved with Kingdom Hall cleaning. If they had anything to do with anything that was considered a female task, so cleaning. Or I'm just trying to think, more cleaning.
Making sandwiches.
So this was one thing I did notice. So when we went back to the Kingdom Hall in October for Adam's dad's memorial, what I did notice, and what the sisters do without fail, and they do it faultlessly, and they do it incredibly well, was because the memorial had refreshments afterwards, buffet straight out, everybody got a brew immediately. It was very well organised in that way. Once the sisters are given that role to step up to, you could never fault them. It's not that they weren't capable of doing the microphones or the sound system or being in an attendant or being, you know, anything else. One, it's nothing to do with ability. We know that. And I just remember, I think it might have been He Who Shall Not Be Named who mentioned this on one of his videos back in the day when I used to watch them, when he coined it in such a way that I think is perfect, which is, if you give a sister a long stem and it has a microphone on the end, she's not allowed to touch it. But if you unscrew the microphone head and replace it with a mop head, she can go for a life. And that summed up everything. We sisters are not allowed. And I remember bringing this up to HB Adam when I talked to her. She was a diehard, still is, I'm sure, a pioneer sister in the congregation. And it was a while. I bumped into her a longer time after I'd left. And I brought this up to her about, you know, I think it's just ridiculous that we are just as capable as the brothers and we were just never allowed to do anything. And she said, yes, but it's a loving arrangement from Jehovah, because the way they sell it to these sisters is, when you come into that Kingdom Hall, Jehovah's made it so that the men serve you in every way. It's a privilege to sit there and do nothing. It's a privilege to be silent for 5 hours a week, less 5 minutes. It's a privilege to have those brothers hand you a mat. I'm just like, you are all deluded.
I had a friend years ago in Southampton congregation when I was still a witness called Rachel, and she went and did a bricklaying course, and then she asked the elder at her Tuesday group if she could help out at a quick build, and the elders had a meeting and said no, she couldn't help out at the quick build in a bricklaying capacity. But that elder, who denied her the opportunity to work at the quick build, asked her if she'd build him a barbecue in his back garden, which she did.
Told him where to shove it. Did she do it?
No, she did it.
Do you remember, I remember, when sisters were allowed to be attendants at the convention. Now, they weren't allowed to be attendants at the circuit assembly, but we were allowed, as sisters, to stand on the doors and ask people if they had their badges. On the way into the conventions at the MEN Arena back in the 90s.
Really?
And we were allowed to do that. And then in the early 2000s, it stopped. And it stopped because brothers felt that some brothers would not take kindly to being asked, where is your badge, by a sister?
No, they wouldn't. I remember when they first opened Hellaby, and They had waiter service, didn't they? And women were allowed to do the waiter servicing.
Do you remember? Yeah, the little brown tickets. Do you remember the little brown tickets?
Yeah,
you would save up, peel off the food tickets. So they can do things that serve men. They can do the menial things, but they can't possibly put together an outline or a talk.
So despite the fact that women can now wear the trousers. Literally, but not metaphorically. Do you think that much will have changed in that setup, in that religion?
No, I don't think so, because the whole religion is built around the man is the head of the household and the woman has to be in subjection to the man. And they hold that very, it's like one of the core principles, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Do you remember when we would go to the field service arrangement? And field service, I would go to, I'm just talking midweek now. So if ever we were on holiday from school, that was your auxiliary pioneer month. And we would go to the midweek arrangement. And for example, if SR was the only sister who was around that day. So yeah. Most of the time it was attended by, you could get 5 or 6, 10 sisters who'd all turned up, but no brother. So who's going to offer the prayer? So this sister, whose house was the hosting of the field service arrangement, she, before we went out and asked the prayer, she would, before we went out, she would put a tea towel on her head to do the prayer. Because even when there are no brothers, this symbolic idea of head covering, it's
that's archaic. Interesting. Because so my auntie, her husband died. So she had a son and a daughter and my cousin, the son, got baptized quite young. So then there was a situation where there was a little boy, you know, probably 11 or 12, baptized with his mother in the house. And she used to do the whole tea towel on her head thing in front of her own son, which just strikes me as highly misogynistic. We're breeding little tin pot misogynists.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I remember when after you got baptized, Adam, and then you were a servant, I think you single-handedly took every single field service arrangement midweek.
I know. It was embarrassing. It really was.
This 18-year-old lad taking over the field service arrangement in front of 65, 70-year-old sisters who, you know, who knew the Bible inside out.
It was a struggle to come up with new material.
Yeah,
because I'd be there at each one during the week, and it was a real struggle. They must have got really sick of me. And the one thing I remember from that period is I talking about this women not being allowed to do things. I went out in the ministry one afternoon, and I was arranging to meet a sister in our group who was a bit older. She was late 50s, early 60s, and we were just going to go and sort of do the usual JW door knocking thing. And I got to her house and she said, oh, actually, I've got a lady that I want to go back on. And I think it might be a Bible study. So will you take it? And I said, well, I said, I could, but I've not prepared for it. So I don't know what you're planning to study. So I'd rather not. And she said, oh, that means I've got to do it. She said, I'll have to go and find a hat. So she went... She went upstairs and she found this hat, and it looked ridiculous. But she had in her mind she had to wear the hat for the entirety of the ministry session to show her subjection to a baptized brother. Bizarre, absolutely bizarre.
Imagine how that must have looked to the other person who was not a witness.
Just eyeballing them, looking from you to her in this dark hat, going, what the hell is going on?
Absolutely insane.
Some old wedding hat that she'd got sticking about.
Or a Butlin's baseball cap or something.
I mean, a tea towel, I used to think this was supposed to be dignity in front of God, right? Submission and all that. A tea towel is the most hysterically stupid, undignified thing you could wear.
I can remember the tea towels being used on several occasions, and there was another time. I know we've gone way off topic here, haven't we? But it was, I don't think you were there, Steph. You might have been there. I can't remember. There was a Tuesday night home book study back when we did those, and it was at my parents' house, and my dad was away for some reason, and I was the only baptized brother there. So I was taking the book study. I think I was only about 19. And because there wasn't another baptized brother there, the one that was meant to be there, he didn't turn up for some reason. So we needed someone to read the paragraphs. So I thought, well, really, there's no one here, so I've got to do it. So I took the book study and read all the paragraphs and conducted the meeting and said the opening and closing prayer and did everything.
God.
And it was just bizarre. So bizarre. So
when, When we had that situation, if there was only one brother there and a whole heap of sisters, a large army of sisters, they would go round and take it in turn to read a paragraph each, like nobody's the other guy. Do you know what I mean? Like nobody's important here. Everybody's the guy. We all take it in turns.
I should have done that.
There must have been different habits in different congregations, wasn't there?
I'm glad I wasn't there. I just rolled my eyes so hard at that. You doing the you would whole have done. Thing.
Yeah, you couldn't have been there because I would have heard you rolling your eyes. Yeah, I think I just panicked as a young lad. I just panicked.
Yeah, that's
tough. That is tough for a young kid, isn't it?
And because I remember when my brother got baptized, I think he got baptized at about 16, 17, and his first field service day after his baptism, he was doing the prayer for the field service. And I really felt for him because he just wasn't, he only got baptized because my dad wanted to be an elder, you know. And then he just wasn't him. Mm. I really felt for him.
The women are a large army though, aren't they? And I think we've kind of touched on the fact before that there are probably less and less men available to take up positions, and that does cause a problem in the running of the meetings, doesn't it? I don't know how they're gonna.
It does. Yeah, I've done a little bit of thinking and research on this, and a fairly recent development is that they are now recommending elders can be 21 years of age, which was in our time that was never something
that's unheard of.
So I think they are running out of men to be elders, and I think. Probably two. Well, one thing for definite is going to happen is that congregations are going to be merged because there will not be enough elders to run a congregation. You need a minimum of, say, four to run a congregation in the UK anyway. And, you know, it's only going one way for them.
In fact, moving on to that, Adam, you've done some research, haven't you, for this podcast about some older kingdom ministries. Shall we move on to that?
Yeah, can do. Yeah, so it's a bit of a trip down memory lane, really.
Oh, it's Thursday night as well. Okay,
it's Thursday night. So if you're sitting comfortably,
it's meeting time. Okay.
So for those of our listeners that don't know, when the three of us were back in the organisation on a Thursday night or a Tuesday night, whichever it was, we would go to the Kingdom Hall. It would begin at 7:30. But if you wanted to show that you were a spiritually strong family, you'd get there at 7.
Yep.
So you could have some association beforehand and show how good you were. Things would kick off with the Theocratic Ministry School. Who remembers that?
Yep.
Yes.
I never understood when they used to do a bit from the Scriptures Inspired book. And then we would never go through that in any kind of order. It would just be a random few paragraphs from what I remember.
Well, I'm going to enlighten you and you'll understand it now, Steph, after all these years.
Great.
So every year in about October, there would be a Theocratic Ministry School schedule for the following year. And it would consist of the following. Assignment number one is the talk you've just mentioned, the instruction talk, 15 minutes.
The instruction talk and then the Bible reading. Yeah, carry on.
Yeah. So the instruction talk should be handled by an elder or a ministerial servant. I'm obviously reading this. It should be delivered as a 15-minute talk with no oral review. The objective should be not just to cover the material, but to focus attention on the practical value of the information being discussed. Now, I don't know about you, Louise, but in Steph and my experience, some speakers were better at this than others.
You
could have a 15-minute sleep at the beginning of the meeting and not miss anything.
Yeah.
It was incredibly boring. So that was the instruction talk. Then it was followed by the Bible highlights. So I'm not traumatizing anyone here, am I?
Little bit.
So there would be a qualified brother, either an elder or a ministerial servant, who would be given between 6 and 10 minutes to pick out one or two highlights from the three or four chapters that we were all supposed to have read that week in preparation. Yeah. Yeah. Which I don't know if anyone did. I never did.
No, I always had to underline my watchtower for the Sunday because my dad was insistent that everybody had to see that our watchtowers were underlined. It was so performative. So he would go so far as when, because my mum worked full time and had four kids, five if you count my dad, and yes, he would underline her watchtower for her.
God.
So that it would look prepared.
I feel like I used to do the Bible reading because when it was in the Old Testament, and if it was one of the begats, yeah. I used to think, how are they going to pick out? Oh, interesting from this.
Yeah.
It was really hard sometimes. Yeah, I did a few, I think, of Bible highlights.
You must have done a few.
It was sometimes hard to pick something out. But yeah, again, it depends on which person was given the talk. It could be interesting. Most of the time it was pretty boring.
We were all just waiting for the service meeting. That was where things got good. It was interesting. Yeah.
We've got a way to go because next comes the student assignments.
Mm-hmm. The number one talk.
Is that where they go and it's the hooker court group that gets to go into the second school?
Correct.
This week with us. And you get up and it's like the most exciting thing. Like, yes!
To go in the second school, yeah.
And you all get up and go and sit in the second school and then a second lot of people have to give those talks as well. Oh, it was so exciting that.
Interestingly, it wasn't done by a group for our hall, I don't think. But it was done when I lived in Wales, the Welsh speaking part of the programme was the talk. So you would go in the second school if you were part of the Welsh
bit.
Yeah. So you would either do a talk in Welsh, sisters would do one of their little weird chats in Welsh, and then you would be counselled in Welsh, and then you would all go back to the main hall.
Cool. So the way I remember it is at that point, the conductor of the school or the elder for the school, he would say, so I'd like to invite the second school students to go to the second school and do their assignment.
And it was always freezing in the second school.
Yeah, it was in ours.
The second school was also where you got thwacked on a Sunday when it wasn't in use and you were in trouble for talking. If you needed a good pummeling, you got taken out to the second school.
We used toilets for getting spanked. But the second school was where we used to play British Bulldogs afterwards until somebody came and told us to stop.
And did all your literature get given in the second school as well?
Yeah, so you could get one round of British Bulldogs in before the queue formed for the magazines.
I can just remember as a kind of younger man, if there was a girl, lady, sister who was given a talk in the second school and I kind of fancied her, I'd go in there and watch her give her a talk.
No way.
Because you got the choice to either stay in the main hall or go in the second school.
Yeah, ours wasn't done by a group, was it?
No, it was just free choice.
So
the first talk was always done by a man or a boy, a youth, and it was a 5-minute talk and Bible reading.
Yeah, and then they took that talk part away, didn't they, later? And you didn't have to do any introduction or conclusion. You literally just got up and read it, and then you got that down.
That's it. He just read the Bible passage. So when he does his 5 minutes and comes down, he then gets assessed and graded in public in front of everyone. And he's either given a W
to work
on an aspect of his delivery. He's either given an I for improved or a G for good. Yeah. In front of everyone, in front of, 120 people. Well, that's not terrifying at all for a 12-year-old.
No, but given advice and given real sort of detailed criticism from a window cleaner who's, not dissing window cleaners here, but you're certainly not teachers in any way.
Assignment number three, which was also 5 minutes, but there's a key difference. This will be assigned to a sister.
Yay.
The only part, as you guys were mentioning before, that a woman could do, and like you said before, it was two women. Just to make sure that the woman was not teaching the congregation.
One of these microphones was always set up and the other person, the householder, had to hold their microphone. Never understood that one either.
Oh, and for the hall we grew up in, Steph, do you remember the issues we had with the police station behind?
Yes. Oh, this is brilliant. This is so funny. You need to tell them this.
So but this was back in the 80s and 90s. So the Kingdom Hall we had at the time backed onto the local police station. And on a Thursday night, sometimes if the radio frequencies were blowing in the right direction, instead of hearing what people were saying on our platform, we would get the entire police broadcast of the police radio. So if they were doing a raid on the local pub, it would broadcast through our sound system.
That's awesome. That must incredible. Have been so exciting.
It was. It was absolutely incredible. That is one of my favourite memories.
Yeah.
Anyway, we digress. Finally, on the Theocratic Ministry School, assignment number 4, this is 5 minutes, and this could be assigned to a brother or a sister. In the Kingdom Ministry of 1996, the subject is a Bible character and what we can learn from their life and actions. And then following the school, we would have, I think it was a song, wasn't it?
Yeah.
In the middle.
But no prayer. Yeah. Just a song. Sorry, I've just got this thing in my head of the police of Whitefield going around and wondering why on earth they're listening to two women talking on the platform about smoking. having a chat as if they're at work about the dangers of drinking too much.
Or listening to a discuss on a Bible character and what we can learn from him.
Do you know that problem with the radio? I don't know how that got resolved because that seemed to go on for a number of years.
I just think that the police probably upgraded their system and we stayed in this archaic. Oh,
that is the thing of beauty, that
yeah.
is.
Gosh.
Yeah. What a time to be alive. yeah. So after the song, let me get this right now. So we had the middle song, as Steph said.
Yeah, then it was the service meeting.
Then it was the service meeting, wasn't it? Now, this is where it got really exciting. So bear with me. I'll give you an example of what a service meeting was like. So here we've got a 10-minute section, local announcements. Call special attention to an announcement regarding the November 8th awake. So that would be basically like any announcements that needed doing, local or national, then that would be the section for it.
Do you remember that moment as well when in the middle of the announcements, there'd be a brother who'd say, such and such an elder is now going to come to the platform with an announcement. Oh. You're like, oh, someone's been disfellowshipped. And then he'd just walk up to the platform and then very, very sort of morosely just say, this is to announce the congregation that such and such person is no longer a Jehovah's Witness, or such and such person has been disfellowshipped. This is what they used to say in the 80s and 90s. And then there'd just be this absolute horrific silence. And then it was all like, anyway, back to how to knock on doors when people have got loads of kids and what you say. And it was just...
Is that
somebody's
where...
life had just ended, you know what I mean? And we just had to pretend that nothing had happened. And it was even more uncomfortable when that person had come to the meeting and was sat at the back to hear their own disfellowshipping.
It was awful. I can remember that happening a number of times. And they'd almost be this excited murmuring, chattering. Yeah. I wonder what he's done. I wonder why he's going.
See, you always thought it was somewhat sexual, even if it could have been.
And do you remember when there'd be a local needs and it'd be a marking talk?
I was going to say, is that when the local needs talk was? I don't know. Does that come after that?
Well, local needs could be anything, couldn't it? So I think it was usually it could be, because our local needs for a good couple of years was all about was buying a new Kingdom Hall and building a new Kingdom Hall. So our local needs, I remember that for years, was about, it was a general, often quite heated discussion about, you know, where we show, and then we'd have to vote and you'd be looking around and who's voting, and they would take a vote of, you know, should we look at land in this area? And I remember that.
I can remember local needs on being alone with someone of the opposite sex. So that must have been something that the elders had picked up on. I can remember local needs on alcohol. Should you serve alcohol at, you know, house parties and that kind of thing? So it'd just be things like that, wouldn't it?
I was the subject of a local needs talk.
Well, yeah, a marking talk.
No, well, not really. So when I lived in Southampton, and I was getting married to my practice husband. Although he'd been born as into the Jehovah's, they were like third or fourth generation, he'd never got baptized. So when we met, we were like 18 and 19. I was baptized at 16. He hadn't got baptized. And we didn't really think out of it because he was a witness, you know, he was to all intents and purposes a witness. All his family were, generations of them were. But then when we said we were getting married, and they said to me, well, he's not a believer. You're marrying an unbeliever because he's not baptized. So then we said, so they said, oh, you can't use the Kingdom Hall, right? So then we said, well, we're going to get married anyway, and we'll have it at a registry office. So then we thought we'd won at that point. Then they gave a local needs talk about us. So we rocked up to Kingdom Hall, didn't know this was coming, and sat there through a talk where they said, if anybody attends this wedding where somebody's marrying an unbeliever, they will be, well, they didn't say they'd be disfellowshipped, but they'll be.
They'd be marked. So you had you did have a marking talk against you.
Yeah. And so then we had to, because we'd booked the registry office and a reception in a pub, and it was like only for 23 people. We had to cancel it all. So then he applied to get baptized, and they said, well, you're only trying to get baptized because you want to get married. So they turned him down. It was really odd. But the talk, we sat, I mean, we were like, what, 18 and 19 years old, and we sat through a talk that basically told the whole congregation and all Robert's family, nobody is allowed to attend this wedding. It was so heartbreaking.
Do you know, there's something, it's slightly off topic, but there's something I wanted to ask you guys, especially because you came with me to my dad's memorial in a Kingdom Hall. If you remember the response that I got, it was quite polarized, really. So a lot of people were at one point queuing up to talk to me.
Yeah, that's what I noticed. And
then there was the other 50% that wouldn't even look at me. And aside from the fact that I got asked to leave my dad's funeral within seconds of entering the building, which is
by your brother-in-law, another day.
Yeah, I just wondered whether they would have had some kind of local needs soon after about how to treat people who have left.
It's a tough one, isn't it? Because this day, the Memorial Day, was about 10 months, I believe, after the new guidance had come out about talking to disfellowship people.
Yeah.
And you had disassociated. So it will have been announced at our old congregation, I'm guessing, that you were no longer a witness, and everybody knew about it. But I think people, I mean, I've ignored disfellowship people at their own parents' funeral. It's despicable. But they would have had, I think, a little bit of relief knowing that they were allowed to talk to you, and that it was like, as he would call it, a conscience matter.
It seemed like some of them were confused.
Yeah.
I
tell you what I noticed or didn't notice, because obviously I was there with Steph, and Steph was, and some people were speaking to her. As an outsider, you don't notice who's not speaking to someone because it's a negative.
Yes.
So Steph was saying to me, you see that lady there? That's my sister. You see those two children there? That's my niece and nephew, and they are completely ignoring you. So in the end, I was saying to Steph, is anybody shunning you now? Is anybody shunning you now?
Yeah.
Because you can't see it happening. So only the person that it's happening to knows that it's happening. So from my point of view, Adam, I saw, as you said, people queuing up to talk to you. I thought, oh, wow, this is like mad. If I'd not known how shunny they were, I would have gone in and gone, what lovely people. They were so friendly to Adam, and they were so warm and welcoming. But you would have noticed the people that made a deliberate point of not speaking to you. And I wouldn't have noticed that, because I would have just thought, I wouldn't have known who knew you are. That would just thought there were people talking among. It's so subtle, but so poisonous, is that shunning thing.
It was. I remember talking to Tony outside, who was in attendance. So when we drove up in my car. Adam and I had met up just before. We met up with you afterwards, didn't we? And then I was with Adam in my car, and I was, you know, really nervous going, right, we're driving up to the gate now, this is it. And Tony, who was he was one of the rare instances, their door had been knocked on in the early 2000s, and they'd been brought into the religion that way, him and his wife. And he was so thrilled to see Adam. He was like, oh, I didn't recognise you there. And he reached over me into my car, over me, shook Adam's hand. He didn't really remember me, but he was great with me. And he was so lovely. And I went into the Kingdom Hall and we had the memorial. And then we were the last one, some of the last to leave, weren't we? I mean, you and I, Louise, we went and to Greg's and got something to eat and came back and he's still chatting, which was brilliant. And we didn't want to take him away. And then on the way out, we saw Tony again. And his wife, we were chatting, they were showing us pictures about their grandkids and everything. It was so lovely. And then it was like, we'll see you then. Because we knew that after that, it's not like we could go and catch up. It's not like we could all go out and have a meal or have a beer together. Within that bubble, that was it. We'll talk to you because of this day being what it is. I'm sorry to hear about your dad. But there was that unspoken thing of, we'll see you in, 20 years when the next close member of the family dies. You know, when I go to my sister's funeral, whenever that is, and she's only 45, but you just don't know what's going to happen. You're going to see so many people. And I think there is an element of people were really happy to see you, but there is a line that unconsciously they just can't cross.
It just felt, I think there is that for some of them, that there's that line that they can't cross. One thing that interested me, there was a couple there who, they weren't from my dad's hall. They were from a hall that I'd been in for 10 years. And I was very close to them. And they came up to me at the beginning and they said, oh, hi, how are you? How are you doing? I've not seen you for a long time. And the brother, the husband, so he's an elder now. And he said, after the niceties were out of the way, he said quite seriously to me, Adam, can I speak to you after your dad's memorial? We need to have a chat. And I said, yeah, of course, I'll be here for as long as you like. And what I noticed after the meeting, after the memorial, because I looked for him, is that he was speaking to the coordinating elder of my dad's hall for a little bit. And they seemed to be in quite deep conversation in the back room. And then he didn't come and speak to me.
Wow, I didn't know that.
So I think he'd been talked out of it by the other elder. Because I think essentially what he was going to do was to come and, in brackets, talk some sense into me. But I think he got warned off.
That's interesting. I didn't know that. So any can carry on. So
yeah. So service meeting was usually in three parts. So for example, there'd be a 10-minute local announcement. Then there'd be a 15-minute item. Then there'd be a 20-minute item. So I was looking through all of the Kingdom Ministries from 1995, and it's so obvious that there was incredible emphasis put on getting the magazines into people's hands, making return visits, and warning them that we're so close to the end that they need to do something right now. And that was 1995. So contrast that to the meetings today, and there's almost no emphasis on magazines or any kind of literature anymore. It's all about, it's very short, 3 or 4 minute meeting parts. There's never any 20 minute items, with 25 paragraphs, that kind of thing. It's all very, very.
People just don't have the attention span anymore, do they? Are they showing a lot of videos these days?
Yeah. So if you look at, it's not called the Kingdom Ministry now, it's called a meeting workbook. But if you looked at one for this week, for instance, there'd be maybe 3 items and 2 of them would include watching videos on the projector. So it's very, very pared back and almost, if I can use the expression, dumbed down.
Oh, yeah.
There's not very much substance in it anymore. So that was the midweek meeting. And then we'd have closing song just about when everyone was falling asleep at about 9:15. And a closing prayer. And then, I don't know about you, Steph, but my family were always staying on behind the meeting.
Yeah, we would say, well, your dad was an elder as well. So often the elders would have to have an elders meeting after the meeting anyway. There was always an elders meeting on a Thursday. I used to really like the Thursday meeting. That was my favourite meeting. I think partly because, it's Friday tomorrow. It felt a little bit less heavy, I think. Yeah. Than a Sunday meeting. I hated the Tuesday book study, absolutely hated it. But I did quite like the service meeting.
I hated the Thursday meeting because Top of the Pops was on and I never ever see it. And when we started buying VCRs, and really old elder in our congregation gave a talk, and he basically said that you weren't allowed to video anything that was on during the meeting because there would have been no element of sacrificing that time to Jehovah if you just were able to catch up on the things that you'd missed while you were at the meeting. So I wasn't even allowed to video Top of the Pops when my mum bought a video machine.
Wow.
That's hardcore, that, Louise.
It's very hardcore, I know. It was really different with different congregations in our circuit as to what you were allowed to do. And I think we had some real old-timey elders in our congregation. So I remember a ministerial servant who was like in his 20s. He wanted to go and see Phil Collins. I think he was on at Roundy Park like decades ago. And they had an elders meeting about it, whether he could go or not. And although the answer was, well, it's a matter of conscience, there was a very heavy finger putting on the scale to say, but you shouldn't really go to a pop concert.
Wow. So, yeah. Right. I remember, you know, talking about sisters being in trousers, there was a day when I had to work late. I only worked at Tesco and I had to come to the meeting directly from work. I think I finished at 7 and the meeting started at 7:30. So someone picked me up, brought me to the meeting. But because I was in my uniform, I had to sit at the back because I had trousers on. So I had to sit at the back for that meeting.
I can remember if ever I missed a meeting through illness when I was older, you know, sort of 12 onwards, I'd be allowed to stay at home while my family went to the meeting. And I never admitted this to my parents, but on those occasions I watched the bill, and the bill was not allowed to be watched because my mum and dad thought it was a soap.
Yeah,
and they
mine
said,
too.
Soap operas, you know, we shouldn't be watching soap operas. So I watched the bill when I was off the meetings.
Small joys. I used to hate the Thursday meeting. I liked the Tuesday group because it was in somebody's house and you sometimes got cake or something, or a cup of tea. I quite like the Tuesday group. So have those two meetings merged now?
So the Theocratic Ministry School, it doesn't really exist in that format. They do have two.
Well, they can't call it a school, can they? Because
there's no teaching element.
There's no teaching element. There's no safeguarding either. To have a school, you literally have to have safeguarding put into place. So they had to rename it because there's no official safeguarding.
There's definitely no safeguarding going on. So, yeah, it's very much dumbed down. So that doesn't really exist in that format. They have a meeting that is still dedicated towards the ministry. But, of course, as we said before, it's not focused on literature, on handing out literature to people. It's just about...
how to stand by a car.
Yeah, how to make eye contact with a car.
There's a lot of that. They occasionally do something on letter writing or how to start a conversation with a work colleague or something like that. But there's very little substance.
It's mad if you think about it as well, isn't it? Because if you think about all those hours upon hours, hundreds, if not it will have been thousands of hours that we spent on the ministry knocking on random people's doors, literally going to their houses. And most of the ministry, especially midweek, say it again, is done by the women. And we would be going to people's houses sometimes on some very sketchy estates and some very sketchy areas and thought nothing of it. But two sisters are not able to stand near a cart without a man near them now. Sisters aren't allowed to do it on their own, I don't think. There has to be a brother in the vicinity, I believe.
Okay.
This was so dangerous.
It's mad, isn't it?
I remember calling on a Hell's Angel chapter in Southampton when I was 18. I nearly cacked my pants. I was proper scared. And then I remember being on a council estate in Batley once, and I knocked on one door, and this man came to the door, big scary man in a wife beater vest, and he looked at me and he goes, "There's a man down there eating cucumber with asbestos teeth." And I can't, I don't know what to do with that. Thank you, bye.
That was in the reasoning book, that, Louise, I think.
Was it?
How to respond to conversation stoppers.
And I remember when I was like about 13 knocking the door once, and there was a lady who now I know was mentally ill. But at the time, to me, she was just talking gibberish. And I was trying to do the whole reasoning thing with her, and it like she was mentally ill. The people that, you know, the
vulnerable were preyed on so much by witnesses.
But we were vulnerable as well, going to everybody's doors. You know, calling on, there'd be murderers and rapists. People knocking on Fred's West door, weren't they, until he got caught?
Yeah.
Every single person we called on. I used to think about that when I was on the ministry. I used to think every crime that's ever been committed, we're knocking on them people's doors.
Mm-hmm. Jimmy Savile.
I think he lived in quite a nice flat. There was probably an intercom. You probably know.
Yeah, he lived in. Did he live in Roundy Park?
He lived at the top, didn't he, of a block of flats? The fancy apartment.
Yeah, posh flat.
Well, that was an interesting blast from the past. So, is anybody gonna go to a meeting at any time, or is it a bit off the?
Yeah, I mean, so maybe to explain to listeners, because we haven't explained this, the subject of today's podcast was changed because of my massive mistake. I was meant to go to a meeting incognito where nobody knew me because I was down there on holiday, and I didn't. So I am planning, next time I'm on the mainland, I am planning to go to a meeting.
Explain why you couldn't go, because this is brilliant.
The reason I couldn't go is because I went to the meeting the week that all of the witnesses in the area were at their summer convention at the local football stadium. So there was no meeting on. The place was locked up. The gates were shut. And it was entirely my fault, because I should have checked that before I went. But there we go.
What would be hilarious is if the meeting was going on, but Holy Spirit had kept you out.
Well, it's a possibility, Steph.
Well, thank you very much for all your research. That was a really interesting discussion.
No, I went about 10 years ago to a Sunday meeting in Bradford, because I was living there at the time and I didn't know anybody. Nobody knew me. And I was just utterly bored.
Yeah.
It was so empty and dull.
The last time I went, decades ago, it was just full of old people. And there were a few young children that had been born in from people that were my age, like some of my peers that I knew that had grown up and had their own kids, but not many. It was really aging. It was like going into a church, like what you think about going to a church. So next time, are we going to talk about the old alcoholic himself?
Yeah, drink along with Rutherford.
Yes.
Oh, please. Yes, please.
Okay. But before that, I shall be seeing you, Adam, in a couple of weeks' time.
Yeah, really looking forward to your visit to far-flung corners of the UK, Louise. We shall, we're looking forward to your visit very much.
I've got over the puffins, Adam, because my son went to South Africa on a rugby tour with his school, and he's brought me back a picture of them little penguins that they have on Cape.
Oh, yeah.
Cape Penguin, whatever it's called. Yeah, so that's okay. Don't worry about the puffins now. I'm all good.
Well, I will be sending you a sort of a suggested itinerary, just a loose one.
Cool.
And the idea is to take you straight from the airport to see the puffins, if they're still there.
Oh, thank you.
So if they are, fine. If they're not, you know, like that. And Steph, I know you're not coming up this time, but
loved to. The offer was so lovely. I've just moved house. I've just moved into another flat, and I am utterly brassic. But
no,
I will
no
try
problem.
And be there
but,
next time.
Yeah, the offer is open not curtailed by any particular dates. So if ever you think, you know what, I just want to go and disappear up there for a few days, then just
That's
get
lovely.
In touch.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you, team. And thank you for another great episode of Asking for a Friend. Bye.
Bye.
Bye, guys.